Welcome back to Upfront, and our phone number 632-2306. If you would, please hold your calls for a few minutes. We have John Ulrich with us, and he is running for House District 15B, which again is currently held by Jim Neuberger, Republican, as is John Ulrich. However, Neuberger is running for Amy Klobuchar's U.S. Senate seat. So his seat will be up for grabs. And there are, I believe, four Republicans, right, that are vying for that nomination. And we have John Ulrich of Hillman with us. And John, welcome. And first of all, maybe you'd let us know what the district really encompasses, and because it's only a small portion that's actually Morrison County, right?
Yeah, it's rather kind of surprising the way they did in that gerrymandering. They put two townships in Morrison County in District 15B, so we're kind of at a loss. We have one delegate, and now we're trying to drum up new delegates for the area, and depending on the numbers that they come up with, we can have either 6 or 16, and depending on the math.
Is it have Mille Lacs County then?
No.
Okay,
It has
Benton.
Benton County, okay. Sherburne County, and part of Wright County.
Okay.
Wow. That is kind of a large, it seems like a large district.
Yes.
But anyway, So anyway, we do have some listeners down there, and I bet you the, is it Hillman and Mount Morris townships that are from Morrison County?
It is Hillman and Morrill Township.
Morrill.
Okay. Excuse me. I made a mistake. It's Lakin Township and Morrill Township.
Oh, okay.
Far
so that is southwest. Southeast. Southeast, yeah.
Southeast yeah. corner of Morrison County.
Okay.
All right. Well, in a couple of minutes, if you would, give us your background and all of that.
Okay. I'll take a real good stab at it here. So I'm 62 years old. I was born in October of 1955. I've been married to Linda Ulrich for soon to be 28 years. We raised a large blended family of 10, and we live by Christian values. I retired from the U.S. Army and Army Reserves with over 30 years of service, and I retired as a Chief Warrant Officer 4, completing 5 commands and 4 overseas deployments. I own and operate a 280-acre farm located in Morrison County. I own and operate a small plastic injection molding company. I have a degree from Anoka Hennepin Technical College. I completed an aviation program with Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, and I'm presently a full-time student at the University of South Dakota studying political science and criminal justice with a plan to go on to Mitchell Hamlin Law School. My passion is to serve the people of our great country. After retiring from the military, I had to keep with my passion to serve. I followed state and federal government all of my life. All of my issues line up with the Republican platform. I am conservative. I believe in the Constitution. I will always support and defend the Constitution, and I'm pro-life. I will work all the critical issues that will come across my desk and listen to my constituents. I will work hard to follow the list, broad-based issues that I have listed here, energy, transportation, roads and bridges, agriculture, criminal justice reform, veteran support, and refugee relocation programs. And most high on my list is bureaucracy oversight. And I will explain a little bit about that. A lot of times you write laws and you put them into place, and then they're handed over to bureaucracies to enforce those laws. Sometimes there's regulations that come along with that to overstep, I believe, what the law's intent was. Some of it's got to do with soil and water conservation. Makes it hard for the farmers to do what they do. Some of the other things is as far as building permits and agricultural things. I went in to get a building permit not too long ago, and I was asked about, well, how large is your feedlot? Well, I don't have a feedlot. I got a loafing barn to hold 38 head of cattle, and I got a 40-acre pasture. It's not a feedlot. So there was regulatory things that they wanted to impose on my small operation, which we've been doing for a couple hundred years. It just doesn't seem right. And then some of the other things like OSHA regulations are good things, but they kind of overstep. Once upon a time, I had OSHA inspectors into my business. Had to negotiate a safety program and all that kind of stuff, but it was almost like the Gestapo came in and wanted to take over my business and charge all kinds of fines. And it was like, hey, wait a minute, let's back up here and take this negative and turn it into a positive and figure out how we're going to overcome this and make my business better rather than trying to destroy me. There are so many things that are regulatory on small businesses that I really believe that we need to work on. Land usage permits and those types of things. I can't see why somebody should be overtaxed because they use their garage for storing their pickup truck that they do small contracting jobs on. Mm-hmm. Or even like me, I have a small shop that's about 5,000 square feet. It was designed to be an agricultural building, but I do a little bit of manufacturing and I build some plastic molds and those types of things with the intent when I retire, I'm going to use it for my farm shop. Why should I pay $3,000 or $4,000 a year in taxes for a building that's not zoned commercial? And I can't sell it as a commercial identity. It's kind of like we need to have some change here. This will be one of the things that I think can entice small businesses to develop in our district and not get them to want to move to other states like South Dakota where they have tax incentives and those kinds of programs that they have to draw people out of Minnesota.
You know, the bureaucracy is a problem, and one of the reasons is that elected officials come and go. The bureaucracy remains forever, and they know that. And so they take what you say as an elected official with a grain of salt. We'll see if he's still here in 2 years, you know,
right.
And this is a real problem.
Yep. Well, one thing I will say about myself, I'm in for the long haul. You know, I stayed in the military all of my adult life, and I retired the last day of my birth month of my 60th birthday because I have this thing called mandatory removal.
You're going to get rid of you one way or another.
Yeah. And the thing is, it was horrible. I mean, I'm in pretty good physical shape. I have a lot of knowledge that I could have stayed with the military and helped them develop new programs and those types of things. Now I want to transition to public service with that same dedication that I had when I was in the military. I'm in for the long haul. One of the things that I want to do is I want to be able to go out to the public, and because I have been involved in some of the things like building permits and ditch permits and county projects that were going on, and this ditch setback program that they put in this last year. I don't agree with the law. It needs to be amended. But one thing I want to do is set up some programs where I've got some public advisory committees that I can meet with either monthly or quarterly and give them an update on what's going on at the Capitol building and be able to get some feedback from the field to be able to develop programs that would work better for the people. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I want to do when I talk about bureaucracy oversight, I want to be able to go to these places and say, okay, we got this law that we put into effect. How are you implementing it? And I'm one of these guys, I do research, and I don't hunt, I don't fish, and I don't do any of those types of things. I do like to ride horses, and I like taking care of cattle, but the big thing is I want to follow through from the beginning to the end. And if it's not being implemented the way it's supposed to be, we need to go back and make change again. And I think I can convince people on the floor to see it my way.
All right. Now, do you have something of a schedule in the near future if folks would like to meet you and ask questions of you, et cetera?
Well, this Saturday from noon until 6 o'clock, and we made it a long afternoon for the simple reason is because some of the farmers in the area have chores, people have family things going on. I plan on speaking to a group of people at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at the Grub and the Pub in Ramey, Minnesota, in their conference room. And feel free to come in anytime during that period. We can talk one-on-one because that's really what I want.
Yeah.
I want to talk to the people because I want to know what they want, and I want them to learn to trust what I say is true.
Okay.
Well, John, you were a warrant officer for, what, 30 years, you said?
Well, no.
You were in the reserve, Army's active Army?
When I first went in the military, I was on active duty.
Mm-hmm.
I went to my first school down at Fort Eustis, Virginia, graduated number one in my class for helicopter maintenance. And then I interviewed to go to a special operations unit out of a base. I don't want to
That's fine,
say
yeah.
what it is.
Right,
but the thing is it was an anti-terrorist group that was spooled up after Desert One. If everybody remembers the Iran hostage crisis situation we had when Jimmy Carter was in office, that unit kind of formed who I am as an adult.
Okay.
And that dedication to protect and defend the Constitution and our people in the United States is what's in my heart. And all of that goes along with service. But I stayed enlisted for about 15 years, and I went through this program. It was called the Aerial Observer Program, because I went in the Army because I wanted to be a helicopter pilot. So I got in this enlisted program that was only around for a few years, about 10 years, and I flew OH-58 helicopters as a scout weapons team leader. And then I transitioned over to being a personnel NCO because I liked working with people. It was really great to have people come in my office and say, you know, I've been trying to get this stuff through, trying to get it done. I said, come over here, I'll help you. Take care of it a few minutes later. And believe it or not, people remember those things. If you check my Facebook page out and my website page, you'll see comments from soldiers all over the United States that have either worked with me or for me during my course of my career. And they put some pretty nice comments on there, and I was very surprised. I almost got me teary-eyed the other night. But going on further after that, when I was working for this one colonel up here at Camp Ripley, he walked in my office one day and he says, you need to be a warrant officer. I said, I don't think I want to be a warrant officer. So him and his XO filled out his packet for me and said, this is what you need to do. You need to go to the board and you need to be a warrant officer. So 30 days later, I was headed to Fort Rucker, Alabama, and I became a warrant officer. And the rest is kind of history.
So when you were working at Camp Ripley, what type of work were you doing up there? Were you still doing personnel stuff?
I was doing personnel stuff when I was at Camp Ripley. I was with an exercise unit that trained other units. I was a personnel NCO, and I was also the reenlistment NCO, so convinced a lot of people. One of the things is I got them all to reenlist, whether it was for inactive reserves or active reserves. I never lost a soldier the whole time I was there for a couple of years.
So you're the one.
I guess I'm the one. But anyways, I had to leave there and go into my career field, so I transferred to several other units. After I finished warrant officer school, I walked in front of the colonel's desk, and she says, excuse me, she says, how was school?
Anyway, one of the things that I really impressed when Steve was talking, or you were talking about your background, you're going to college. You're still going to school at the age of 62. Now, that to me, that demonstrates that you are have an active mind that's constantly trying to improve yourself. You had me going until you said you're going to law school.
Well, you know what? Warrant officers in the Army, they're considered technical experts in their career field. Mm-hmm. So I was a tech guy. They made us guys commission officers here a few years ago so we could hold command positions. And what I was trying to say before I walked in front of the colonel's desk, and she says, well, Mr. Ulrich, what would you like to do now? And I says, I want to be a commander. She looked at me like I was nuts.
Most people used to be warrant officers, so they didn't have to worry about command.
Well, I had five commands, and I set up two units on my own, pretty much, and traveled all over the five-state area. My last was I was a rear deck commander for a unit out of St. Cloud, and it was a battalion, the greatest time of my life. A lot of good people there. I got to travel to all the units we have in several states. And it was a fun time.
You know, one of the things about Steve and I are both old enlisted guys, and I'm always impressed by military background because I think the military gives people certain values and gives them an education that is really helps through your entire life. But some people some people will say that, well, you know, military people, they're used to being told what to do. And so sometimes people are a little bit afraid that if you elect a military person, all they're going to do is they're just going to listen to what the party has to say and only follow what the party has to do. So is that something that you're concerned about or something that...
I'm a little bit concerned about people's attitude towards that type of thing. I've always been a leader, somebody that's been out in front, come up with new ideas. I'm not afraid to stand up and say no to somebody. I'm not afraid to stand up and debate with somebody over mm-hmm. certain things, and that's what you do in committee. There was a comment made last night, and I'm trying to recall the whole thing. A comment made to me when I was attending a meeting says, well, you know, military people, they're used to just being a one-man show, and they basically take control of everything. That's not how I ran my commands. I had a staff that I put together. We all kind of negotiated things. We came up with the best plan. Because here's one thing that I learned very early in my career. And this is a book answer, and I even remember it word for word out of the book. It says, a good commander will take all the available information to base plans, make decisions, and issue orders off of. Well, I carry that same thing into politics. Mm-hmm. I want to listen to the other people. We need to come up with a solution that's going to be the best for most people, because we're never going to please everybody, but we can please the majority of the people.
Yeah. Now, see, the difference between military and politics, one of the big differences in the military, you often have to face the enemy. In politics, you create the enemy.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, and I've actually wondered if I keep going the way I'm going, if I may not have to wear a bulletproof vest to work. But and there's going to be times, sometimes, with the looks from people, the stares you get, almost like Superman thing with the, what was it, the laser sights he had in his eyes.
Radar vision, yeah.
I'll have to stand off to the side a little bit and divert that someplace else.
Well, you're going to have to get used to that, and that's...
Yeah, I don't have a problem.
So what do you think, you know, you've talked a little bit about your background, and you've talked about, you know, one of the reasons why you're running, but what's the probably the biggest issue that you see facing your district or, you know, the state government? What do we need to do when we get in there? What's the most important thing?
I think we need to do away with a lot of the regulations. We have too much, I believe, too much government control.
I like this guy.
And the thing is, you know, if you look at the Constitution, it talks about people need to be able to come and go as they please from their homes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even like the Second Amendment. I support and defend the Second Amendment. Everybody wants to put... attachments onto it, mm-hmm. like, well, we can't have large capacity magazines and things like that, military style weapons. So I don't think anybody should be carrying machine guns on the street. But, you know, really, if you think about it, we got a social issue. It's not a weapons issue, and it's what's people have learned over the last couple, three generations. I happen to be old enough. I remember the very early 60s when John F. Kennedy was in office, and the civil rights movement and those mm-hmm. types of things, and the riots and the buildings being burned down. I paid attention to all that stuff. So I think the key to really gun control is educating our people that we just don't do those kinds of things, and we need to have laws in place that takes the guns away from the bad guys. But we're never going to be able to take the guns away from the bad guys, because they do things that are illegal. They're going to have them anyway. So if you take all the guns away from everybody, then the bad guys are the only ones that are going to have the guns.
Yeah, we don't need more laws to punish law-abiding citizens.
Exactly.
No, we just need to enforce the ones that are on the books. But you still need to take a look at, especially when you talk about how regulations affect small business. I'm very familiar with that. That's an issue that's very, you know, near and dear to my heart, because I think there's a lot of ingenuity and there's a lot of energy that gets tamped down, because once people see what the morass they have to wade through in order to set up a business, or just the amount of their income is going to get taken away by the government because they're in business, they lose a lot of enthusiasm. They decide, well, you know, maybe it's not worth it. And they could be the next Steve Jobs. They could be the next Bill Gates. They could be, you know, someone who could contribute a lot to society, but they just, you know, the government makes it too tough.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And it's sad because because small businesses can create jobs where people don't have to travel long distances
right.
away from home, and it just makes it a much better environment for their families. They can be home in the evenings to be able to have dinner with their families, and mm-hmm. and those values I really cherish. I was in North Dakota here traveling to one of my units, and I stopped in a little town called Strasburg, North Dakota, where Lawrence Welk is from.
Okay.
5 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday, there was no place open. Well, then I found a little gas station down on the Blacktop Road where I could get a sandwich and get some gas, and there was a little hotel in town because I had a friend there I was going to visit. And then I started asking, how come all the businesses are closed? Oh, no, the people in our township, in our county, we don't want people out after 5 o'clock at night because they need to be at home with their families. And I was really impressed with that. That's how those people live. If we could get back to those core values and moms and dads spend time with their kids and teach them, and there's a lot of good parents out there, but because of the job situation mm-hmm. and traveling, a lot of times it hinders that ability for the parents to be able to do that.
Okay, we need to take one more break, so we're going to break away and do that now, and we'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to Upfront, and our guest today is John Ulrich, who is in competition for the Republican endorsement for House District 15B. And John, we're running close to out of time, so some final words.
Yes, I'd like to mention one thing about education. I believe we should have a voucher program that if we want to send our children to a private school, which my family and I did. We sent our children to Faith Christian School down in Forestville, Minnesota for 1 year. It cost us approximately $6,800. We just couldn't afford to do it. But if we could have taken that money that would have been coming from our tax revenue and be able to send it to the school where we had our children mm-hmm. at, we would be able to have our children graduate from that school. That 1 year that they were there, they learned so much. I mean, it was just a value system of life that they learned. We talked about it at the dinner table.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is really unfortunate that we can't work out a system where if you want to send your child to a private school, a Christian school, a Catholic school, whatever, that you can't be able to take at least some of the money that you're paying in your taxes to the school district and direct it towards that school.
Well, as these darn unions, you know.
Yeah, well, and yeah, that's a huge thing to I'm in favor of it. I think it's a great idea.
And you're absolutely right. Here's what I think will become of it if we get this to become in effect. It will cause the public schools to be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe some of the complaints that parents have about their schools and the school districts, maybe they will start changing some of their education policies. And there is some good teachers out there. There's good schools. I'm not downplaying any of those. But I think they could be a little bit more competitive. I would like to say in my closing, I have a website. It's www.johnulrich.com.
Spell Ulrich.
U-L-R-I-C-K.
Okay.
I have a website page. Go on my website. It'll give you the links to go there. You can donate there. I'm not a big pusher of donations, but I mean, it does take money to run the wheel.
Right.
But the thing is I got it set up so that you can, if you have a question, send me an email, because my email is open to the public, and I will try to answer the question to the best of my ability. And if I don't have an answer for you, I'll tell you I don't have an answer because I don't have enough information. And I will find the information and get back to you. That's what we do.
So when do the caucuses start in your area?
I'm a little bit confused, but I thought I had an email yesterday that said the 5th of February.
That sounds about right. Usually they start mm-hmm. around February. And then you have the county conventions, or the district conventions will be in March and April. So
correct.
And you are still battling for the endorsement, but you're doing the right thing, getting out here early and letting people know about you. So good luck.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Best of luck. Thanks for stopping by, John.